Welcome to Gold Star Classroom, the podcast where our panelists go back to school. We'll grade them on their answers to a variety of general knowledge and trivia questions. They don't know what we're going to ask, and we don't know what they're going to say. The student with the highest grade at the end of the class will win the coveted classroom prize, the Golden Banana. I'm your host and headmaster, Professor Jerry Jaffe. And now, let's meet our students. On my far left is Cleveland-based actor and artist Brandon Stroud.
Adding to the stock of available reality.
Thank you, Brandon. And on my left is Assistant Professor of Biology at Lake Erie College, Dr. Deborah Schulman.
I'm pretty well focused on the existing reality.
Thank you. And on my right is Professor of Digital Media at Lake Erie College, Professor Stephen Gutierrez.
Thank
Hello,
you.
Steve. Hello. Welcome to class.
Thank you.
Welcome, students.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
We're going to begin today's class with a history question. American Civil War.
Okay, bad start
wasn't
for
there.
Me.
Well, none of us were, but your grade may depend on your answer.
Okay.
So pay close attention. Here is a name from history. Wilmer McLean.
Nope.
Any bites? Raise your hand. Just let me know if you have an answer or a guess.
I mean,
Wilmer
it
McLean.
Sounds like it could be a cottage cheese, like a company name of a cottage cheese.
I'm thinking that of I might Wilbur the Pig. I don't think that's right.
Lincoln's Pig, maybe?
Well, Wilmer McLean is a very interesting and strange position in the history of the Civil War. Mm-hmm. He was present at the First Battle of Bull Run, and he was present at the signing of the surrender of the South. Mm-hmm. His house was, in fact, located where the battlefield was for the Battle of Bull Run.
So was he actually participating in this activity, or they just had a war around his house?
They had a war around his house. He was actually a retired officer in the Virginia militia, but he was already in his 40s, so he was not required to fight.
So he just stayed in his house and watched the war happen?
He could sign his name. Well, that's part of what happened at the end of the war. But in the first battle, a cannonball went down his chimney. Confederate troops were, like, stationing themselves in his house. And there was ongoing skirmishes during that July 1861. And so that him and a lot of the other residents of that region eventually moved. So he moved.
As well they would.
You'd think.
That's a bad neighborhood.
It's not a good neighborhood if you have cannonballs coming down here.
Who documented this? Did he write about this?
Well, I don't know what he himself wrote, although there is a famous quote which is attributed to him. And I was tempted to start with this quote, but here is what McLean is supposed to have said. The war began in my front yard and ended in my front parlor.
Now he might be talking about marriage, possibly. I've never been married, but I...
It fits.
We can confirm that.
I question the truth of the... I mean, Mel Gibson, Patriot movie, the war was happening in his front yard, and I'm certain that didn't happen with the Redcoats, so I'm calling false on this. I don't know if I buy into it.
Well, one...
was that an option? We can call false.
I'm questioning reality. That was my opening statement. I'm adding to the stock of available reality.
You won't be able to question the reality of your grade at the end of this test.
That's true. I always question it.
Grades are black and white, my friend. Some evidence that substantiates the story is that after the signing ceremony was over, the Army of the Potomac began taking tables, chairs, and furnishings out of his house as souvenirs. Because they knew that it would be, like, historically important
items. And
what
did he have to say about that?
Nothing. He couldn't stop them.
So here's this dude in his house, and now it's been pillaged?
It is being pillaged.
For the Antique Roadshow.
The table on which Grant had drafted the document was paid $20 in gold by the soldier who took it.
Oh, so I think it's paid for it.
Yes. The table that the Lee had signed the surrender on, a general... Ord paid $40 and then just took the table.
That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money in 1860s currency. I don't know how much.
Anybody know how much? It is a lot.
More than 40.
Yes.
Yeah.
At least
had a couple zeros.
42, 44, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Historians, when they're trying to figure out the value of owed money, compare it to staples, like how much does a loaf of bread cost or things like that.
Yes, but people have been saying it was a nickel for
yes.
forever. So where does the nickel loaf of bread start and end?
And we don't know, because how big is a loaf of bread?
That is another excellent question.
That's very philosophical. Probably too philosophical for us.
This sounds staged now, that the people who came in to attack had planned this to resell the items that they destroyed.
They staged the entire Civil War.
Possibly.
Just to generate
I hadn't thought about it until now.
That is a completely screwed up
reality,
my friend.
I like that answer so much, it deserves a gold star.
Thank you. All right.
We have our first gold star.
I would have to disagree because I saw the movie, and the movie, it looked real. People were really dying.
One last piece of trivia about this event is that also present at the signing was George Custer, not yet a general himself.
This is before his last stand?
Yes, this was before his last stand.
You know why I know about that?
Why do you know about it?
When I was a kid, there was a restaurant called Custard's Last Stand.
Ouch!
It was an ice cream shop. Well, custard.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's why I know about that.
Was the custard better than the pun?
Well,
was their business better than whatever he went through?
Hey, people liked it.
After the war, McLean worked for the IRS until his death in 1876.
Oh, see, so he could handle the money that
yes.
he...
he was actually forced to leave his house where the surrender took place because he couldn't afford the mortgage payments later. So however much $40 is worth, it wasn't enough to pay off his house.
I wouldn't even want to pay off my house.
I didn't know there was mortgages
destroyed.
In those days, I suppose that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, the IRS is timeless as death, right?
Yes.
And taxes.
Next subject, get ready. Have you ever heard the expression, hoist with his own petard?
I have, and my husband and I have debated about this endlessly.
See?
Interestingly, both he and I came to the same incorrect conclusion about what it means. I'll let you continue, but I do, in fact, know what it means.
Well, anyone else in the class think they know what it means?
No.
Have you ever heard that saying before?
I have not.
You haven't?
Oh, my father used to say it all the time.
It strikes me as a moderately common expression. Maybe it's not as common as
I thought. Both my husband and I are fully aware of it and both incorrectly understood it.
Maybe my mom said it in Spanish and I didn't get it.
darn non-native English speakers. what do you think it means? Hoist with your own petard or petard. It can be pronounced either way.
I'm going to reserve the real answer and wait. See, what I thought it meant
what did you
before
think it,
I found out what it meant.
What did you used to think it meant?
I thought a petard was some sort of a garment that sort of went over the shoulders, sort of looks like a jock strap and goes over the shoulders and to get picked up by it and then sort of lifted by one's crotch. This is 100% wrong.
Well, I mean, I think...
I'm glad you didn't enter it as your answer, because you would have lost a lot of points on the test for that answer.
But like getting stuck by an item of your clothing and getting a big wedgie.
Like, an old-fashioned wedgie. No.
It sounds like it would be an UrbanDictionary.com as a possible maneuver or something. Maybe you just, something you would do alone to your own.
It sounds like it's something about doing it with your own strength, but perhaps I'm wrong.
Well, no, I'm on the same.
Oh, okay.
Well, this saying has something in common with another saying. Let me tell you another saying. Mm-hmm. You've probably heard a saying like this before. Not a mouse stirring.
No, this one I don't know.
That hoist with your own petard and not a mouse stirring have something in common.
Christmas Carol?
No, well, that's a good guess.
That's all the creatures. No creatures were stirring, even a mouse. But it is the first thing I thought of when you said that.
Mm-hmm. You probably know this saying then. Frailty, thy name is woman.
I think I'm offended by that one.
Yes, and so you should be. Mm-hmm. I
could agree with it, but I don't know. I don't know that I've heard it in those.
I know some pretty frail men.
Terms.
All three. All and I am one of those frail men, actually.
Sensitive.
All three of those sayings have something in common.
See, now you lost me.
Have I lost you?
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you one more clue.
All right.
To thine own self be true. Have you ever heard that saying?
Yes.
Getting closer.
Yes, maybe. No. Mm-hmm. Do thine own self be true?
Are we doing Shakespeare?
We are going in the right direction. Mm. All four of those sayings have something to do with Shakespeare.
Fantastic.
You are correct.
Now I'm ashamed. You introduced me as an actor and I don't know.
Yes. They are all Shakespeare.
Yes. That's true.
Are they all from the same work? Because this I'm not going to be able to do.
All right. I'm going to start listing quotes, and you tell me what play it's from.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
Brevity is the soul of wit.
That's from...
I'm going to always say Hamlet, and eventually
correct.
I'll be right.
Oh, you get a gold star.
Oh, man.
All of these quotes are from the play Hamlet.
Oh, okay.
See, but you told me the answer, so I want a gold star.
Yes!
Because I knew it.
No, I didn't say no it. Gold star for you. You're cheating. You might have to go to the penalty box for 5 minutes. To the principal's office. Hamlet is, of the many things Hamlet is famous for, it is famous as a repository of proverbs that it generated. There are literally dozens and dozens of sayings that come from Hamlet. Some of them are probably more popular than others, but nonetheless, you would be hard-pressed to find one play or one work of literature that has generated so many proverbs. Mm. Let me shout out just a few of the more famous ones, and if you have any comments or questions, lay them on me. Something is rotten in the state of Denmark. Brevity is the soul of wit. The play's the thing. Get thee to a nunnery.
People like that one.
Yes. Of course, in your English lit class, they might ask, what does the word nunnery mean?
Is it not the place where they keep nuns?
The word nunnery can mean the place where you keep nuns, but it...
Asylum?
Asylum as in political asylum, as in a medieval model, you are supposed to be able to go to.
Mental
asylum. I've never heard it used that way, but it is, in an Elizabethan context, sometimes used as a slang expression for another place that's chock full of women.
Mm. Oh. Mm-hmm. See,
in polite? Somebody
probably taught me that and I wasn't listening.
Well, polite society, we might say a bordello. Mm-hmm. But then what your Shakespearean scholars will argue about is whether or not Shakespeare meant get thee to a nunnery, as in a
monastery
full of nuns, or if he meant get thee to a bordello, as in a whorehouse full of women of ill repute. Mm-hmm. So both of those are for debate. Mm-hmm. It's not the kind of thing there's a conclusive answer to.
Not my circles of friends. It's not debated.
What do your circle of friends say?
Well, no, they're not debating Shakespeare.
Well, stick with us.
Well, yes. Minus 5 points until you get a better group of friends.
Yes, yes.
Well, I actually think both of those situations involve way too many women all in one space. So I'm comparing and contrasting a nunnery and a bordello in my head, and I don't want to be in either.
Right. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to be in either.
That's too
either.
Many women.
In one place.
In one place.
You know, when you work in a restaurant, the women argue all day long.
Yeah, women are terrible.
I'm just glad I didn't
say
that.
You want this on record?
I do.
One of the most often misquoted lines from Hamlet is the "Alas, poor Yorick" line. Mm-hmm. For some reason, people want to say "Alas, poor Yorick, I knew him well."
Horatio.
But it should be "I knew him Horatio," without the word "well." Huh. I don't know if there was like a film version or a comedic version, mm-hmm. or I don't know where that misspeaking comes from, but... Mm-hmm.
Monty Python.
You think Monty Python's responsible? well, I'll have to grade that exam when I get home.
The changing of that word definitely makes all the difference for me for the punchline landing.
Also, when I'm teaching Shakespeare in class, I always like to point out that he's full of dirty jokes, which most students don't appreciate. The entire play Measure for Measure is nothing but one long dirty joke. But
that was another one.
In Hamlet. Thank you.
I got it.
Did you measure the length of my dirty joke?
I did.
Thank you.
It was not very long.
No, it was not. That's why I prefer the metric system. At one point in Hamlet, Hamlet says to Ophelia, do you think I meant country matters?
Country matters.
And this is meant as a dirty joke.
There's some emphasis there connecting
one syllable.
Yes,
to a raunchy implication.
That word was already invented?
Indeed.
Huh.
There's a lot of dirty words that have already been
invented.
Did
it come from that, perchance?
I don't think so, but I would love to double check that to be 100% certain. And also with Shakespeare, you get, of course, all the words that he coined are invented himself. But in that mix are words that he's the first recorded use of.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And we can never really be sure which falls into which category.
Mm.
But we do know that he had the largest vocabulary of any writer in English and used the most different words and invented the most new words of any single writer.
Do you believe that Shakespeare was actually an old dude that wrote a million plays or a series of people, including one hypothesis I've heard that it was a Jewish woman?
I do not believe it was a Jewish woman.
I heard that.
Right? I've never heard that particular conspiracy theory.
I've mentioned this before. You can't trust him, probably. You probably couldn't trust him. You wouldn't want to play Scrabble with him because you would invent words.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if he is an old Jewish woman, I'm guessing the only accurate picture of him is of that illusion of the pretty girl, old woman picture. That could be either or, I've always thought.
Here's a question.
I know that women couldn't act.
Correct.
So could women write plays at that time?
There are no known examples of surviving plays written by women from that time. We don't know in the realm of closet drama if there might have been amateur female writers whose work did not surface. I will have to look this up. There are many, many sort of conspiracy theories of who Shakespeare might have been.
I mean, he may have written some of it.
Well,
or he may be a pen name for a huge consortium of people.
There is probably, in the English language anyway, in the Western world anyway, not been a single person who has been studied more than Shakespeare. So
you'd think we'd know.
Well, and so therefore we do. You'd think we'd know, and we do know, that A, Shakespeare really existed. B, he was a real theater person. C, he was a real writer. And D, he almost certainly wrote most, if not all, of the plays attributed to him. If anything, the opposite is true, which is there are probably plays that he wrote that we've lost, and some may be rediscovered. His total output is not a large number. 37, maybe? 38 plays?
It's more than I've written.
It is more than I have written as well.
Okay.
But professional playwrights in Shakespeare's era, who that was their full-time job, wrote hundreds of plays.
I saw Shakespeare in Love. That was a good movie.
Yes.
That was a lovely movie. It was about as accurate as...
Well, I don't want to know.
He didn't write that one.
Yes.
He didn't write that one?
That wasn't autobiographical.
He didn't write that. He did not write Shakespeare in Love, no.
Oh.
Not a biopic.
Although Tom Stoppard did, and he won an Academy Award for writing it, so we're happy about that.
He's equally as confusing.
Before we move on, I want to return, and if you want to go ahead and try and tell us what you think Hoist with his own petard means, we haven't actually settled our original question.
Oh, it's a weapon, and one blows oneself up with one's own weapon.
It's an Elizabethan-era explosive device, like what we might consider a crude bomb now.
Hmm.
And there was a danger of blowing yourself up with it, both when you placed it, but also it was known to have a big backlash when it exploded, so you did not want to be near it when it exploded.
Hoist.
And
is what will happen to you.
Which is to go up into the air.
Mm-hmm. It is not a jockstrap with suspenders.
It is not some kind of Elizabethan wedgie.
That's what I thought. I really did. But I looked it up.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
Well, I looked up Shakespeare, and I found out that he married Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway, correct. Shakespeare is married to Anne Hathaway.
Yes, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
And, which resulted in The Notebook.
Yep.
And a love story across the generations.
Yes.
Google's handy.
I have a biology question.
Yes.
That relates to, the answer is a basic number ratio, but it is from a book. If you have an answer or a guess.
I've read a book.
Did you read any book which estimates the average number of inseminations per pregnancy?
Average number of inseminations per pregnancy.
Yes.
You mean number of times ejaculation occurs inside the female reproductive tract before?
Correct.
Actually, I have.
What number do you have? Or do you want to let them guess first?
Oh, have at it. I don't know if I will have the same number as
you,
because I have absolutely no idea how they've calculated this.
Correct.
But I read it, and I have taught about it in human reproduction classes, actually.
Okay. Well, someone told me the answer.
Uh-oh, so we're down to Brandon.
Oh, man.
What do you got, Brandon? Remember, your whole grade may ride on what you say next.
Yikes. When was this poll taken?
This is the book I am referencing is a relatively
is
recent book.
How many times was the poll taken?
Yes, yes. I'm stalling though. Oh man.
Oh, just pick a number.
Yeah.
Well, I would say. God.
I know. Because if you're the father of a teenage daughter, you want the answer. You'll tell your daughter the answer is one, because you only have to do it once yes. to get pregnant.
Actually, the number in my mind is actually the number of fertilization. Excuse me, the number of active fertilizations per implantation.
All right,
that oh, is so a wow, technical way.
Eggs are fertilized substantially more often than they actually implant.
Okay, I suspect that this figure was not calculated using that specific definition.
Oh, well, that's the number I'm prepared to provide, so I'm okay. going to get enough.
Yeah. Jesus, I don't even, you know, I...
Well, take a guess. You're put on the spot, how many times do you have to do it before a girl gets pregnant?
Oh, I would say, how about 16?
All right, 16.
50.
50?
Hmm. Which is not the number I was going to provide before, but...
But that would be your answer put on the spot.
That's my answer for the question as you posed it.
Okay. What's the answer for the question as you posed it?
1 in 7.
1 in 7?
Yeah. 1 in 7 fertilized eggs actually implants.
I gather the book I got this number out of is somewhat controversial, so I'm going to say the name of the book. So if you'd like to endorse or contradict this book, please do. Have you ever seen Robin Baker's book Sperm Wars?
I have heard of that.
Okay.
Not read it.
I have read it. And this is not a book review section. But it is the source of my statistic. Mm-hmm. According to Robin Baker, there's an average of 500 inseminations per pregnancy.
What kind of sluts are we talking about?
The good kind, apparently.
Yeah.
Wow. Whoa.
That's
Let's not let that number get out.
No.
As you said, teenage girls need to understand. One.
Wow.
Exactly wow. One.
I agree. This might be
it. Well, it doesn't sound like a lot. So
that sounds like
it.
A lot.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, if it sounds like a lot, Mr. Baker also estimates that the typically sexually active adult has penetrative sex approximately how many times in their life? This is globally without regard to mm-hmm. culture.
Or
in their life?
Mm-hmm.
Now I have to do math.
No, just gut check. Just shout a number out.
We can't do that.
Gut okay. check.
All right. Average, I would say...
Having sex for 60 years, 70 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go 5,000.
All right. We have a number for 5,000. You going over or under that?
I'm going to go with more than that. I'm going to go with 6,000.
Mr. Baker estimates
2,000 to 3,000.
Between 2,000 and 3,000 times.
Oh, see, now you had me thinking that people were a lot more busy with the 1 in 500 thing.
Yeah, it might be depressing to me, but...
probably if...
And
if,
wait. We didn't define sex. Is this Bill Clinton sex?
Well,
everybody's definition of sex?
The Baker uses the phrase in this statistic, penetrative sex.
Oh, okay.
So I think it's genital to genital.
Specific.
He doesn't specify that, although
yes.
he does talk
yes,
about
I
it
know,
later in the
average,
book.
But
right.
Yes, if he would have specified the difference, I still wouldn't have had a good answer probably, but...
Yeah, that's what threw me off. That's why I didn't...
Right.
yeah, that's what it was. Oh, what orphan... Oh, okay. It was a different...
It wasn't,
mattress?
It wasn't total oh. sex acts.
16 mattress.
Cherry pies.
Yes.
14 cherry pies. 30 dolls, yeah.
Backseat of a car.
Yeah.
Yes, we got a... Totally right. Figure that out. He also,
well,
I mean,
thanks for that
I'll
education.
Email him.
He does, I mean, I believe he estimates that it's typical to have 6 to 7 children.
Amongst whom?
I think the way he phrases it is it's unusual to have more than 7 children, that the majority of families globally have less than 7 children.
Yes.
I'm just trying to think this book is a little old.
I'm starting to think he's...
It's not a brand new book, but it's not that old either. Okay. I would have to look up the year to tell you, but it's, I'd say 90s probably.
He's definitely a scientist.
1890s.
Yeah. An Amish.
Yes.
Well, speaking of genitals, I came across some other unusual...
Oh, my
goodness
gracious. Whoa.
No pausing.
Try a different segue.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Speaking of segues.
Okay.
Speaking of segues, have you ever heard
we jumped on there.
the slang phrase, Hoochie Coochie.
I've used it.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't say I...
Young Mr. Brandon, having used it, what did you think it meant?
Well, no, I mean, this is going to be weird if it's not. No, I've used... I do poetry, and yes. I love sound poetry. Uh-huh. I've come across that combination, and I've done it for a baby. If right. you know, hoochie coochie coochie. Now, we're not talking coochie coochie.
That's coochie coochie. Coochie coochie is for a baby. Hoochie coochie is something else completely.
I can tell you what a hoochie coochie
is. What is a hoochie coochie?
Well, it goes back to our last. For sure, but.
That's why we made the segue. Perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, that was. Red Light District. That's my. In that direction.
It is in that direction, but not quite. It's actually, you're like a block off. It's not quite in that direction. You need to turn off in a surprising.
Sex?
It does not originally refer to sex, no.
The wad of cash in which a prostitute has, her wad, her coochie.
An interesting guess, but no. It is from early 20th century jazz music, and it is a type of dance.
Hmm.
And that one does when one has crabs?
No, not specifically crabs. It has been... described as a kind of belly dance. So it's sort of a mid-drift gyration dance that women would do in an erotic manner.
Okay.
But now it means sex. Am I wrong?
Does it mean sex to you?
I thought it did.
No, coochie, it coochie? Doesn't sound no? like
something I said to a baby 2 minutes ago.
No, I was saying like, oh, they were doing some hoochie coochie. That doesn't mean they were having...
A woman of ill repute.
Oh.
Well,
because a hoochie mama means something very specific.
Well, a hoochie
and a coochie means something very specific.
In jazz lingo, as in the song Minnie the Moocher, a woman who does this dance would have been called a hoochie coocher.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And to go with what I was implying and Brandon was implying, the Gucci part of the word is. Probably derived from 1800s slang for the woman's genitalia.
Well, then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that word itself
yes, the hoochie. Yes.
Predates mm-hmm. calling this dance.
What a fun era.
The hoochie coochie.
Well, if they were to look at our terminology now, they'd be equally as impressed. But.
People misuse our current terminology.
Even though it's not current as in 2013, maybe it still is, a more modern dance is the pogo. Do you know what the pogo is?
I feel like you jump up and down.
You nailed it. Gold star for you.
Hooray! Yeah.
It's a kind of mosh pit style dance where you stand and bounce up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It has been claimed, although these things probably can't be verified in popular culture, that there's a specific person who invented the pogo.
Mm. Mr. Pogo.
That is a good guess, too.
Yes, Michael.
Not gold star worthy, but very nice.
Yeah.
Mrs. Pogo.
No, but she begged him to stop doing it. She begged him.
No, that was the jackhammer. Also.
We'll just carry on as if you hadn't said that. Any ideas on who invented the pogo dance?
Pogo dance. What time period are we talking? Or
more recent jazz. I'll give you a clue.
Sid Vicious.
Correct.
Really?
Sid Vicious. Gold star. Plus 10 points on your exam.
That? I'm a genius.
You are a genius.
I was a punk rock girl, truth be told. Oh.
All right, students. That brings us to the end of this class period. But before I release you.
Woo!
There you go. Before you go, sit down. Put your book back on the table.
School is fun.
School is fun. I'm going to add up everyone's grade and award somebody with the coveted Golden Banana Classroom Prize.
Okay.
But
all right.
While I'm doing the math, I just wanted to give each of you a chance to say one more thing, whatever's on your mind, or just you can tell your teacher, this is your classroom evaluation, tell your teacher how much you love him.
Well, I definitely want to confirm to you, Steve, Lincoln was not a documentary. Just to clear that up for you, he seemed...
I don't believe you.
Well, I also don't think the Civil War
How
was real.
How is this kissing up to the teacher?
It's not. I had to get that out of the way first. kissing up, yeah. You know, I think you, the topics were well diversified, and I appreciate it.
I still remember Wilmer McLean's name.
So you learned something.
I learned something.
Yes.
I did.
And you'll be repeating that to someone before the day is out.
I will.
I think since you tutored me before, and I know all these answers already, that I should be the top student.
It's funny you should say that, Stephen, because you actually have the lowest score in the class. And the student with the highest grade, a quick round of applause for Dr. Schulman. And thank you all for coming along today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next time.
Good fun times.
All right.
Gold Star Classroom is written and produced by Jerry Jaffe. Our producer and engineer is Stephen Gutierrez. Original music composed and produced by Jeff Gettert. Mr. Gettert is also our assistant producer. All commentary and opinions expressed by guests of Gold Star Classroom are meant for entertainment purposes only. For Gold Star Classroom, I'm Jerry Jaffe.